Okay, we're moving on to our second topic, which ties in with the first topic of powerlessness, which is what is the solution to the hopeless situation of powerlessness. I will read you a brief quote from the chapter entitled, Again, There is a Solution, which puts it into a nutshell. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and toward God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. If you are as seriously alcoholic or addicted as we were, we believe there is no middle-of-the-road solution. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible, and if we had passed into the region from which there is no return through human aid, we had but two alternatives. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could, and the other, to accept spiritual help. To elaborate on this nutshell, I give it over to Chris.
That's excellent. Excellent. Can you hear me? Yep. My name is Chris Raymer, grateful recovered alcoholic addict. I had one. It didn't take me but one break to finally get one to come up and talk to me. He says, you can't introduce yourself as a recovered alcoholic or a drug addict. He says, no, and I'm not making fun of that person. They're still in here. Welcome. I tried to explain. Again, this is where treatment centers have taken us. If you want to introduce yourself as somebody that's still sick, by all means do that. If you just got sober, you are recovering. You with us? 2 weeks after I got back to this fellowship after that suicide attempt, I'm working the 12 steps. I've got a completed 4-step ready to dump a 5th step, and the obsession to use was lifted and has never returned in 20 years. Now, I'm going to take that power and put it under a bucket because it makes you uncomfortable? I don't think so. And that's what we're talking about. I know that some of this, guys, is going to make some of y'all feel kind of goofy and kind of uncomfortable because you're not used to talking about it. But we need to all get to a place in all of our fellowships where we can talk, here's the word, unapologetically about God. Unapologetically. I want to mention real quick that the Big Book tells me to introduce myself to the newcomer as a person who has recovered. I mean, we've got to hit this and we won't hit it anymore. But treatment centers, they're the ones that started this. I want you well, but I don't want you too well. See what I'm saying? Because you're a great customer, but you'd be a better one if you could come back about 6 or 7 times. You follow? Because after all, we're always sick. Can I get sick again? Absolutely, guys. It's not a guarantee. The book says that if I will do certain things, I will be placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. And that's what we're looking at. And once I get in that spot, the obsession goes away. Do you think it bothers me sitting out there on that street last night? Why? Right across from the Zanzibar, as a matter of fact. Do you think it bothers me for a second that there was a guy, I'm sitting there right there across there watching the dope deal go down? I'm looking at that thing and my mind's going back and I'm remembering the time I'm the same kind of deal in Houston, Texas, and you with me? Did that trigger me? Did I think about using? Absolutely not. I'm a recovered alcoholic and addict. I can go anywhere I want to go. Any place. And it's one of the things that we've got to clear up, because that's one of the reasons we have such a tough time in the States keeping the young adults in our fellowship. That's one of the reasons that so many people out there in computer land want to take shots at our fellowship. And they always use that as the first shot they take. Who wants to be a part of a fellowship where you have to admit you're sick for the rest of your life? My disease is in remission. I am well. Thank you. If the obsession hadn't come back in 20 years, I don't think it's going to come back tomorrow. If I continue to do what I'm supposed to do. Layla just read it. As long as I stay spiritually connected, everything's rock and roll. Y'all follow? They paint this picture in treatment that every day is a day you could use. Oh my gosh. We had a lady in our group not long ago that came up and she said, Chris, there's just some days I can't even go down the wine aisle at the grocery store. I said, baby, you need to finish working these steps. She's 15 years sober and she can't be in a room with wine? That's pathetic. It's pathetic. And it's not an accurate representation of what the fellowship is about. You could get me on a soapbox. Oprah, last month, I don't know if it was a rerun or not, had this little girl on there and she's talking, I've been sober. She's a little drug addict. I've been sober for 4 years. And Oprah said, oh, it must be hard on you. And she cried, every day is a struggle. Well, Oprah doesn't know any better. She just let it go. Now, what a piss poor representation of sobriety. Can you imagine one of the little dope fiends watching, sitting there smoking a crack pipe, watching and saying, you know, I've been thinking about getting sober, but gee whiz, at 4 years, is she that miserable? The hell with that. We painted this picture that it's so willy-nilly, that it's just, it may happen and it may not happen. That's not my experience, and that's not what the big book says. I got to show you something here. In the 80s, part of the problem was is that we took the stuff in treatment, we took it all and we turned it into a self-help program. And again, with the insurance companies, I was talking to a couple of cats at break about it. And when the insurance company started swinging back the other way, that's how we answered it. I was like, oh, well, this is not spiritual. This is self-help. And we did biofeedback, and that's when the little teddy bears came on the scene. And oh my gosh, it was just a cluster, you know. But we got away from this idea about the spiritual stuff. And still to this day, it's the one area that we want to walk on eggshells about. There's two things that we are afraid to tell the newcomer. This is about God, and you got to get off your butt and go work with another drunk. We don't want to talk to him about that. We need to start talking to him about that. My question to you is this. In this short time we got, I'm going to try to finish up a little earlier so we can get some more questions. But the question is this. Why is it that we're so nervous about this God thing? In chapter to the agnostics, we agnostics, in the first paragraph, it gives a great summation. If any of y'all want to know where the summation is about how to qualify a drunk, sit down with somebody and it says this. In the preceding chapters, you have learned something about alcoholism, drug addiction. We hope we've made clear the distinction between the drug addict and the non-drug addict. I'm paraphrasing. Here's the sentence. If when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, power of choice. Or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably one of us. Dig? Bill Wilson's being very diplomatic, but he's asking you two questions, choice and control. Now here's what people hear when we talk about this, going back to the last hour, when they say we don't have a choice, it sounds like we're letting everybody off the hook. I've got thousands of choices. Y'all understand this? There's a bunch of you in this room that made a conscious choice. I'm either going to stay home and do honeydews, or I'm going to come to this little gathering and I'm going to participate. Thank you for coming, but that was your choice. You follow? I'm going to bring my book to group or I'm not. I'm going to follow my sponsor's instructions or I'm not. You with us? I've got thousands of choices, guys. But if I make the choice to pull myself away from this fellowship, all bets are off. The insanity will come, and it doesn't make jack what your external world looks like. You're going to go use again. I'm going to ask the question to sum up on that. How many of you guys drank and drugged when life was great? All the hands are up. I get. How many of you drank and drugged when life was crap? All the hands are up. There you go. Nice relationship. Cruddy relationship. Great job. Cruddy job. I'll never forget when I first started working at the hospital in the early 90s, the lottery was just in Texas, in the United States, but especially in Texas there. And so we had one of our first lottery winners from there had come through our hospital, and they were zonk. They were alcoholics who won the lottery. Bad. But I'd spent half my life telling people because poverty, because I didn't have any money, this, that, and the other, and that's why I drank. Financial stress is what caused me to drink. Now here you got a guy with $10 million in the bank, and this bozo can't stay sober. You follow? And it was like, oh my gosh. You know, you look at the cats that come in this hospital, drop dead movie stars, you know, these gorgeous people. It's like, why would you drink? You've got everything on earth. It ain't nothing to do with that external crap. Why can't we get away from that? It's about disconnection with God. You know who let me read this real quick before I forget. My meds are out of adjustment. It could be the coffee too. I don't know which. Two paragraphs down. But it isn't so difficult. About half our original fellowship were exactly that type. They're talking about agnostics or atheists. You with us? About half. That means in Alcoholics Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous, about half the cats that come through are grinding their teeth on this God stuff. You know what that means? That means that half of us aren't. Y'all down with this? Why is it that every time we turn around, we've got to turn this into some kind of major controversial argument? When I was trying to get sober in the early 80s, the old timers used to tell the people that were early in the program coming in, says, don't talk about God too much. You'll scare the newcomers off. I'm more concerned with my membership in my group than I am whether or not this person gets the message or not. The problem is that our fellowship, we could sum this up for a whole hour, all with this one sentence. We are so open and roomy, it's not even funny, folks. We don't care who you pray to, as long as you pray to something. Everybody just gets jammed up about this. Well, I don't know if I'm a Christian or not. Well, rock on. Work the 12 steps. You're going to get in touch with some kind of higher power. It's not my decision. That's just the way it works. It's cause and effect. If I want to get out this room, what do I got to do? I can talk about it until the cows come home. You with us? We can visit about it. We can do workshops about it. But sooner or later, I'm going to have to disconnect and walk straight out that door. I'm not getting out any other way. You can't carry me out. I got to walk out. It's the same thing with this thing called a spiritual experience. Do the work, you'll have a spiritual experience. Well, I don't believe in God. Are you willing to believe there might possibly be something to this? Well, on the outside chance, good. Let's do the work. Oh, but I want to talk about this some more. I mean, I hear people in meetings all the time. It's like, I'm working on 2 and 3. I'm working on 2 and 3. Some of you are in here now doing it. I'm stuck on 2 and 3. I'm stuck on 2 and 3. No, you're not, you bozo. You're stuck on 1. You're stuck on 1. That's right. I'm telling you, the people that are griping about God, there's too much God talk in here. There's too much talk about spirituality in here. They're the people that are not the real alcoholics and addicts. You, if that offends you, come see me so I can do it to you closer. Because I'm not going to change. Come on, guys. If I'm going to say it again, that's what we do in the qualifying deal. Guy, if you can stay sober because you want to, because you're on probation. We went through this before. If you can stay sober because you want, that's what our families are waiting. When the cats come to treatment, they're all coming in. And when the lady will call me on the phone, her mom, you know, says, well, I think she's probably hit bottom now. Oh, you think? Rock on. Well, we're fixing to find out if she's hit bottom. Well, this last DWI should have done it. You're nuts, because the book says we're not going to remember the consequences of even a week or a month ago. You follow? If your experience can stop you from drinking, that's the guys in the South. That's what they talk about. Keep it green. Keep it green. Oh, my gosh. You know, that's why we end up going to meetings and just listen to war stories. Listen to the people talk about smoking crack. Listen to people. We're going to keep it green. Why? Guys, constantly looking at the dark is not going to tell you anything about the light. We need to shut up sooner or later about this. We're going to talk about it some later on tonight. This idea this afternoon, this idea that we're supposed to be, that's all we do in AA is talk about the dark is ludicrous. And some of you grind your teeth about this until the cows come home. All we have is our story. No, sister read it earlier. We're talking about it on page 17. We just started talking about it. Page 17 says we got a common problem. What's the common problem? Look around this room, guys. We're all cut from different cloth. I mean, drop dead gorgeous. There was a guy back over here that's so butt ugly, I don't see him. Well, it's the same stuff. We're all the same. You know what? But the only thing that ties us together. Come on. What do we got in common? Look at Layla. Look at me. What do we got in common? Nothing. We come from two different walks of life. But the thing that we have in common is the problem. Is that when she puts cocaine in her body, it does the same thing it does in me. And in order to stop using the cocaine, the obsession to go away, she had to do certain things to get connected spiritually, just like me. The church didn't work for me. Just going and praying didn't work. It may work for some people. It did not work for me. I'm not knocking the church. I'm saying the church alone is not enough. Those are the cats that come into our hospital that are the toughest people we deal with. Born-again Christians. The toughest people, just impacted with what they already think they know about God. And everything you think you know about God is going to keep you from knowing anything else new about God. Yeah. You can just see him. I know. Like a damn minor bird, like Mickey Bush says, I know. Oh, you do. You were just smoking crack cocaine last night. If you know so damn much, why don't you shut up? Did I get you? Okay. I spit a lot. I spoke at a place in Texas one time and they did it like a Gallagher concert. They all had sheets in front of them. They pulled over them. I'm like, a little bleak shield here. The book is so open and roomy. Bill Wilson and those cats, you know, Bill was, coming from a Christian bent, he understood it. In the writing of the literature, they all understood it. But there were some cats involved in the original writings of this book that were not Christian and did not believe the ways a lot of us believed. And they wanted to keep this open and roomy for everybody. And it's a soapbox of mine. I need to tell you, I'm going to go ahead and say it from the podium, and it may offend some people. I have Christian roots, and when I got sober, those roots had been pretty well shattered. I was kind of not comfortable in my skin around it. And over the years, what's happened is I've been kind of led back through several different religions back to my Christian roots. That's just my experience. But the problem that we see in our fellowship today is that we either want to go from one extreme to another. I want to jam this down your throat. You need to believe the way I believe. No more this higher power. It's Jesus Christ. Or it swings back this other way to, you don't need to worry about any of that. It can just be the light bulb. Now, somewhere between Jesus Christ and a light bulb, there's some wiggle room here. I don't know what to tell you. But, back in the 80s, when I was trying to get sober, that was the big deal. You can believe anything, the group, anything. No, I'm sorry. That's not what the book says. The book says you're going to find a power greater than yourself. And I think if we walk on eggshells around this too long, what we end up doing is losing the cat completely. I don't care what you believe in, but you're going to believe in something. You follow? Otherwise, when the work actually starts, you're going to crap out because it's going to get uncomfortable. And that's what I want to talk to you about. We have people all over the world. Because I speak and because of the CDs and stuff have traveled everywhere, I get emails from all over the world. And I get a lot of emails from people that are not Christian who chafe because they can't come to Cocaine Anonymous because it's a Christian fellowship. I think historically we need to look at the fact that we started out as a Christian fellowship. It was started by a bunch of Christians. It also was started by a bunch of people that were also atheists and agnostics and non-believers. But I'm saying we set this thing up so that anybody could use their own faith and their own walk, be it Buddhist or Muslim or Eastern or Wiccan or vegetarians for all that. I don't know what to tell you. I don't care, but you can do it any way you want and still get the same results. If it's working for you, let's do it. One of the things that you got to have in order to get sober, folks, is a dose of humility. And I just got to bring this to your attention. You want to sit there and tell me that you're powerless over alcohol, and then you want to argue with a concept that could save your life. I know we're just talking amongst friends here, guys, but it's everything I can do not to tell that person to go jump off a bridge. That's why I said it a minute ago. Then go back to the first step experience. Because if you think you've got power over this and that you can stop on your own, then go do it. Shut up talking about it and go do it. We got to... Okay. The room's divided like this. In Cocaine Anonymous and in all the fellowships, the rooms are divided like this. There's the people that are working the steps and have had a spiritual experience whose lives are on fire. They may not be rich. Their life may not be perfect. But you can... We're sitting at the stupid breakfast table crying this morning over a bowl of mucilix, for God's sakes. This is nuts. What is this about? And then there's a part of these people that are sitting over here trying to intellectualize everything, trying to get it all figured out. Listen, I'm saying it again. If you're drowning in the water and a boat comes up and a hand reaches down, you're not going to start questioning who that hand is. Well, I prefer a white hand, thank you very much, over a black hand. You don't care, it's what she just read. The desperation of drowning men. Are you ready? There's no middle of the road solution for us. If you're powerless over this substance, we know what's going to fix you. It's this thing called a spiritual experience. So I'm going to say this again. So we get this new little guy in there and he says, I don't know if I understand this God stuff. And I'm sitting there 20 years sober. There's no kidding. Me either. Open-minded. I don't know. I think I know a little bit more now than I did when I first got here, but it's constantly changing. It's rearranging. God continues to take me to different places. I was telling Layla at breakfast, I was sitting on a plane coming back from Seattle reading this book about homeless people, and I started to come undone. I mean, I'm crying on this plane, and it's like, and I am really self-conscious because I am not a crier. I just like, and I'm like a girl on here, and I'm crying like this. A stewardess comes by, are you okay? And I said, but I get back to me on this one because I don't know. I'm coming undone. I mean, I'm being touched by this information coming out of this book and what I'm actually doing in this fellowship. Is Chris Kramer doing everything he can do to help his fellow man on this earth? Man, I'm going to tell you the answer for me was absolutely no. No. And I'm going to tell you, it touched me. God's going to move me to a different spot, folks. Y'all think that you've arrived. I'm not drinking and drugging and the obsession is gone and I am happy, joyous, and free. How cool is that? And how boring as spit is that going to be? A year from now. 6 months from now. Complacency is what kills us. How many of y'all understand that even in relationships? It's complacency that kills us. We just get bored. God dang, I couldn't. I just wanted to breathe the air she was breathing. And now it's like, honey, move away. Complacency, entitlement. That's what gets us. So you're working with a newcomer and he's questioning whether or not he believes in this God thing or not. And so what do? We dust him. Well, go study it some more. Pray about it. Think about it. Talk to 15 people and ask them about their higher power. Oh my God, why not give him a gun and let him go out in the back and just shoot himself because he's fixing to go smoke cocaine? You're asking him to do something that he can't do. Figure this all out. Show me in the book where it says that you've got to have it all figured out. It says, do you believe there's something out there bigger than you? Did you cause that beautiful rain yesterday? No. Maybe something else did. Yeah, maybe so. Move on now. We're done with two. Believe there's a power out there bigger than you? Yeah. Third step. You willing to let this power help you in your life? In other words, are you going to stop trying to run the dang show and realize that there's a power out there that wants you happy, joyous, and free, and that can take you to a different spot in all areas of your life? Again, we remember we talked about lack of power. That's the dilemma. We're not talking about just power over crack or alcohol. We're talking about power in my lives, around my credit cards, around my health, my exercise life. Could you want some of this power? Are you willing to let something guide you? Well, I don't think it'll. It's not what I ask. I said, are you willing to believe that there's something that could possibly help you? It seems to be working for me. It seems to be working for millions of us. Are you willing to believe that it could possibly help you? Well, I guess I'm willing to go that far. Rock on. I sit down and I explain the third step to them. We go through the third step prayer where it says quite clearly that it's going to remove your difficulties so victory over those difficulties can bear witness to God's power. And we're going to do a little third step prayer and then we're going to get up and then we're going to talk this afternoon about the fourth step stuff. And we're going to move right on through it. And I wish you could stand up here and look at your faces. It's like, that can't possibly be. That's okay. I've been... It's that simple. Guys, if I could figure it out without doing the rest of this stuff, without your help, why in the hell would I need to come here to begin with? Everybody wants to make this so much more complicated than it is. I never once had a problem believing that there was a God. Me, Chris Kramer, I never did. I'm eating out of dumpsters in Houston, Texas, and I knew there was a God protected my ass. You with me? I was pissed at that power, I need to tell you that. How could you do this to me? It's all God's fault. You know what I'm saying? I understood that. But when I got back, and I'd been in and out of lots of churches and stuff, and that's the big noose around so many of our necks is that if you just believed enough, guys, I believe there's a power out there that created the universe that could change me and fix my eye like that. I don't think that's going to happen. Why? What's the point? I've watched too many people miraculously healed from their illnesses to know that that takes place. One of the things that I learned early on, though, is that God wants us off our ass doing what we're supposed to be doing. And God's not going to do for us what we can do for ourselves. And all God wants us to do, the book says, is be of service. And we're so blasted selfish. That's why Bill Wilson understood it in page 62. The cocaine's not the problem. It's your refusal to be of service to another human being that's the problem. Now, guys, I'm in AA for 7 years, and nobody will explain this to me. I'm sitting in AA for 7 years, Narcotics Anonymous. Nobody will talk to me about this. Nobody will put it that succinctly. I want to argue my right. In fact, anytime I get up to try to help somebody to do something, oh, no, no, easy does it, buddy. You just got here. You take your time. You take it. Slow down. Like, again, why didn't they just hand me a gun? There's been some great studies out there, guys. There's been some great studies out there. And there was a great article. If I ever find the name of it, the title of the author, I cut it up because I was traveling and I stuck it in a book. And I don't even remember who wrote it. But they talk extensively about these windows of opportunity around the spiritual life. Each and every one of us, we have a moment when we come in. And even the most difficult of us, if we stay around long enough and we get our feet underneath us a little bit, we begin to have this little experience with what we know is God. But what everybody wants to do in our fellowships, we don't do it so much in CA, but we do in AA. We want to make fun of it. We want to call it the pink cloud. And it's like very few things irritate me more than listening to some old geezer talk about the pink cloud. Because I'm going to tell you something, folks, there's no such thing as the pink cloud. Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob understood it completely. Dr. Bob wrote extensively about it. If we're trying to get you to a thing called a spiritual experience, and you start to show symptoms of this spiritual experience, why do I want to pour a bucket of cold water on your head and embarrass you in public by making fun of what's going on with you? We want to walk on eggshells. Somebody comes in excited about God, right? Excited. You're not going to believe what happened today. I was sitting there and this lightning, this storm came up and he's telling me about this. And instead of understanding that this was very meaningful for this person, I want to make light of it. Well, listen, buddy, but just talk to me about this. Don't talk to the group about this because there are other people that are struggling with this God thing. We don't want to. So let's just water the whole damn thing down. Take the passion out. You with us? Don't get too happy. Don't get excited about recovery because it's not good. What about the poor person in the back that's struggling with depression? Oh my God. How can we get to this spot? How did we take a perfectly wonderful fellowship like this and drop it in the toilet being so damn concerned about somebody? That person that's suffering from depression needs to be, quote unquote, we've said it 1,000 times in here, pulled with a vision. We need to tell this person that they're... Everybody thinks it's just about not drinking. One day you're just not going to drink. Big deal. It's like Mickey B says, one of my buddies, he said, hell, everybody, hell, the cat's been sober 13 years. Who cares? Just not drinking is not the goal. Just not doing dope is not the goal. Why do we want you just not drinking and drugging but being miserable? And that's what so many people get. The people that are trying to stay sober on the fellowship alone, that's what they get. They get dried out, they get detoxed, they come in the meetings, they start to get excited, the fellowship puts a damper on it. We make fun of them, we ridicule them, because we've never had that spiritual experience, because we've never got off our own butts and done the things necessary to have it. So we put the lid on it, don't let any light out. You with us? And then it's just a matter of time before he gets loaded and he gets loaded and he gets loaded and he gets loaded and he gets loaded. Go to any AA-related function, CA, where we do a countdown and watch how many people. A year, everybody's standing. 2 years, everybody's standing. You with us? A few years. And then about 5 years, everybody starts to sit down. Why? You think people just got tired of this fellowship at 7 years? No. They got drunk. They got loaded. Why? Because they didn't do anything to treat the spiritual malady. The solution to the problem was laid down, the booze and the dope. And now, the solution, the spiritual growth, they're not doing. We're watching lots of people sober a long time. I'm going to tell you one of the... I can't talk about that. Because of the anonymity, because what we're talking about. We're watching thousands of them drop through the cracks simply because they refuse. I tell you what, I know hundreds of people that I've shared the podium with 10 years ago that are dead today. hundreds of people that I internationally, all around the world, that I shared podiums with that are dead today. Why? Because they talked about a lot of stuff, but they didn't do nothing. Don't listen to my mouth. Watch my feet. Because that's what you need to look at. Ain't that the truth? With the guys, the men and women that I spot? Yeah. No such thing as a pink cloud, guys, is the point I'm trying to get to. It is a real spiritual experience. That high that you get when you first get out of treatment, that high that you get when you first realize that you're on some good solid ground, is real. These windows of opportunity. If I can get you there to that spot, now I've got something I can really work with. Now, because you're feeling good and you're excited, now's when I need to get you through the rest of this work, like a fourth step. Like making a damned amend to that guy that you hate and you said you'd never make amends to. But you're going to have to in order to stay sober. I know, but you're going to put it off. But now while you're feeling great and you're feeling the zeal and the power and the passion that is God, it's the time to do the damn work. It's the time to get excited and finish this process. We've got a fellowship around us that won't talk about finishing the work. Everybody does exactly what they need to do to get to a spot where the pain goes away. And then we stop. I used to be a competitive cyclist. And I piss poor when at that. I just got to tell you guys. But I used to cycle a lot with the guys. But I would get to a certain spot with the cycling where I just wasn't improving. And I was getting pissed. I was one of those guys that I'd come in last again and take my bike and throw it in the back of the truck. And I was, you know, because I couldn't. And the guy said, there's no sense taking it out on the bicycle. There's no sense in getting pissed at us either. What are you doing to get better? I'm riding with the same guys every time. He says, why don't you stop riding with those guys and start riding with us? And I said, I can't even keep up with those guys. What makes you think I can keep up with you? He says, you can't. But you're not trying hard enough with them and with us. We'll work your butt off. You follow? And I started riding with them. And I kept getting dropped. But you know what? The next time I rode with these other guys, I whipped their asses. And then I hit a deer on a bicycle, and that was the end of everything. Oh my gosh, that was a tragic story. But that's the deal I'm trying to say is that, guys, everybody understood it, and Dr. Bob talked a lot about it, is that we get taken to this place of wellness, the window of opportunity. But how long is the window going to open? Some of us in here, we've been on this pink cloud for months and months and months. And some of us, we get it for a couple of weeks. I don't know. But you got to strike while the iron is hot. You're sponsoring a little guy and he's all excited. Now's the time to get him on the fourth step. Don't wait till he's, oh, you'll do a fourth step when you hurt bad enough. No, you won't. You'll go smoke crack cocaine when you hurt bad enough. No, isn't that the truth? Everybody wants to be, oh, you'll address that issue when you hurt bad. No, you won't. When the spiritual malady comes back and the depression comes back and the boredom and the anxiety, you're going to medicate. You're going to go to the doctor. You're going to get some pills. You're going to go do something, whatever. Guys, when you're excited, when you're hot, let's go. Bill Wilson understood it. He was on his ninth day in Towns Hospital when he had his barn-burning spiritual experience. Ebby 12-stepped him and then came to the hospital to talk to him. And while he was in the hospital, they did a third step prayer. And then he had Bill do some writing. And he's dumped a fifth step while he was there in the hospital. You with me? And he's working on his ninth step list, historically, is what they're saying, from Towns Hospital about 9 days in detox. He was in that treatment center twice before and he left AMA both times. Screw this, I can do this my own. And he left. And this time he committed to stay. But what was the difference was not that he stayed. The difference was is that Ebby was there with him, who Roland had carried the message to. Y'all follow how we do this? And it's all connected. But Ebby carried the message to him, and he's doing the work from Towns Hospital, and that's where he's in detox when he has his barn-burning spiritual experience. Everybody thinks he had this barn-burning spiritual experience and then started Alcoholics Anonymous. That's not the way it worked. He had a spiritual experience and then went and started Alcoholics Anonymous. Y'all follow? He was doing the work. It's cause and effect. I want to have the spiritual experience and then I'll do that work.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, good gosh. I love seeing some of you guys, you old beefy guys all buffed up. I wish I looked like that. Well, you can. But you better start lifting some weight, brother. You with me? I'm in a gym twice a week. I ain't lifting enough weight. Y'all understand where we're... Okay, you got to do something. This little window of opportunity may stay open for a while. It may stay open a long, long time. It may short, but we got to strike while the iron's hot. Dr. Bob worked the steps in little less than 2 weeks. When he finally had his last drink, June 10th, he went around and finally made his amends. He's already done the other work. You'll follow? He got sober. Bill D, number three, same story, 2 weeks. Guys, the archival stuff, a lot of you guys know Wally P. You can read his stuff, his archival material. Dick B, there's websites. I've got some little handouts out here later you can snag. They talk a lot about this. All of the cats in early sobriety in AA worked the steps quickly. And it wasn't, I'm going to say it again, until the advent of treatment centers when people started watering this down and telling people to slow up. Take your time. Any group, fellowship, treatment center that tells you to go slow does not understand the urgency of what alcoholism and drug addiction are really all about. In 1987, when I walked back in the back doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, after the meeting was over, they went around and shared some hope with me, and this old geezer got it right in my face, very unceremoniously. He had some little glasses like this, and he leaned over, and he said, "Buddy, we've watched you up here for years pick up these chips." I says, "Are you done?" Yeah. He didn't say, "One day at a time, would you like to walk this spiritual journey?" He said, "Are you done?" It's what we don't ask newcomers anymore. We're going to talk about it and working with others later this afternoon because we need to start asking the newcomer, are you done? Because if you're not, finish the job. Go play. But I'm sick and tired of wasting my time on people that don't want to get well. I know, everybody does. Just because you say you want to get well doesn't mean you want to get well. Y'all understand that? How many guys, we're all masters at it. I love you, babe. Oh, do you? I love you, babe. What we got to do is work the steps. And this guy knew that if they didn't get me connected to God spiritually, there was some other men and women around me too. And they said, we got to get this cat connected. The next day, we did a third step prayer. They qualified me that night. The next day, we went back over the qualification process to make sure I was in the right room. And then they asked me the question, you got a problem with God? Nope. You willing to have this God a part of your sobriety? Yep. Let's do a third step prayer. Day two, detoxing. Did a third step prayer. Got up, they gave me a notebook after some lunch. It says, let's start working. You're going to go home, you're going to shake, rattle, and roll, you're going to feel like crap anyway. We'll see you at 6 o'clock back here tonight. It says, I'll be here. It says, while you're doing that, start making a list of the people you pissed at. Oh, because that's what the book says. After the third step prayer, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, and I started working on a fourth step. That's why 2 weeks later, I've got a completed fourth step ready to do a fifth step. Everybody says, oh, you can't do it that quick. Yes, you can. We're going to talk about that after lunch because it's not rocket science. We want you guys to finish this process, but if it's too damn complicated, you can't finish it. It's not therapy. I got a chance to do therapy in sobriety, and it was a golden experience. I worked through some major knots in my life with a good therapist that understood what God and the steps were all about. Y'all understand it? The obsession to use lifted quickly from me. Within 2 weeks, I'd had that spiritual experience and the obsession was gone. It took me years to heal physically. There was medical stuff out the butt. I'm getting this last tooth back over here fixed. 20 years in, I'm still working on my poor teeth. Y'all understand? It's not an overnight matter. I didn't get perfect. Some of you that heard me 7 years ago couldn't sit in the room because I cussed so much. Today, I don't. Still do it some. Today, I don't. Okay. E for effort. It's a spiritual progress. It's a spiritual growth. But we got to start hiding behind the little cliches in our fellowship. This is spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Because here's the bottom line. If the obsession doesn't go away, and I'm stuck with the wanting to drink, the wanting to use, if the depression stays on me, I will not stay sober. People come up after I talk about this stuff. Well, Chris, some of us are going to get this and some of us are not. Not true. Everybody that does the work. I don't give a rat's butt what attitude you bring into it. If you can come into it and just say, okay, I'll do it. Argue with me all you want. Do it. The end result is you get taken to that position of neutrality, safe and protected. And you have your very own spiritual experience. Maybe like Bill Wilson's, maybe of a very educational variety. I don't know. I hear that in treatment all the time. We're not all going to have spiritual experiences. No, you know the ones that don't, the ones that are going to die. Because everybody that survives this will do it because they have a spiritual experience. But it's going to be different for everybody. Everybody wants to put that educational variety out there. Hey, let me run this by you. How arrogant of me to say, one, that I know what kind of a spiritual experience I'm going to have. I get people in the treatment center all the time. I know I'm going to have the educational variety. You don't know jack nothing. You don't know, have a clue what you don't know. 2 days ago, you were smoking crack cocaine. Now you're in here telling me what kind of spiritual experience you're going to have. You don't even know. You don't even know what you're going to have for dinner tonight, by God. And now you want to tell me this. Why don't you just come at this with an open mind and know that there's a power out there that loves you and wants you sober. It's going to give you that spiritual experience. Because that's what it's about. I'm going to submit something else to you. A lot of you guys in this room have been sober a long time. And a lot of you guys are starting to experience what we call untreated drug addiction, untreated alcoholism. Again, it's coming back. I'm not drinking. And again, I see it around the fellowship lot. I'm not drinking and drugging, but I'm not happy anymore. I'm starting to be very affected by stuff that's happening around me. You'll follow? The book says, unable to control my emotional natures. And all of a sudden, I'm flipping people off in a car, you know, and they're like, whoa, wait, how spiritual was that? Oh, nice. You know, it's like, you know, little stuff that didn't used to bother me now starts to bother me. You with us? Treatment centers, they call it the dry drunk syndrome. You can call it what you want, but that's exactly what it is. Basically, we're in trouble again. It's called untreated alcoholism. We're getting sick again, guys. And that's why I'm saying we don't work the steps once and then forget it. We stay active in this fellowship and we stay active in the program. I'm going to say it again. You can't stay sober with an experience that you had 20 years ago. We had a great dinner last night with a committee. Wonderful meal, but I'm telling you, 2 days from now, I mean, I'm not getting any benefits from that meal. I needed something else in me now, you know? That's what this prayer is about. When we talk about giving my bread, my daily bread, it's my daily infusion, my spiritual infusion. I can't live off the food I had last week. I can't live off a spiritual experience I had last week. Stop resting on your laurels. Stop assuming that it's as good as it's going to get. Well, how pathetic is that? Because my experience is it's not as good as it's going to get. It's going to get a hell of a lot. I'm not blowing smoke up your butt. It's, listen, if you want it as good as it gets, do this. Just sit. And it'll stay. Status quo. Nature abhors a vacuum. You'll stay. And then you'll start sliding. You're either growing or you're going, the old expression used to be. You with us? Guys, I get emails from all over the world, and guys, and they want to talk to me about this. He says, I don't understand. I'm sober 10 years. It used to be good. I'm married. Everything's great, but everything's driving me crazy now, and I'm not a happy camper. And what's up with this? Here it is. I think I need to see a doctor. Not knocking that. See a doctor. They're going to say you're suffering from depression. And while you're talking to them about that, he's going to look up over the little glasses and he's going to say, I bet you're having trouble sleeping too, aren't you? And you're going to go, doctor, I shouldn't have put this off so long. You're right, I am. I'm having lots of trouble sleeping. Oh, yeah? Well, listen, this antidepressant I'm fixing to give you, I'm going to stick a big old barbiturate right on its ass to help you out. You'll sleep like a baby. And a month later, you're smoking cocaine. I don't know what happened. Sure you do. Listen. He can't say that. Some of us have to be on those medications. You're right. But if the answer to your problem wasn't medication before, what makes you think it's going to be the answer to your question now? We're all looking for the easier, softer way. Make sense? Nobody said the spiritual path was going to be easy. Spiritual path is rough. M. Scott Peck wrote some great stuff about the spiritual path. You know, the Bible talks about it. The wide road, the narrow road, the wide gate. You know, I mean, the world is full of, you want to get on, rock on. But the spiritual path is there's a narrow gate. You've got to do certain things to get on it. But once you get on it, you've got to continue to do some things to stay on it. And again, my sponsor says, I'll end with it. I smell more. You know, and I smell more. Yeah, I want to be sober. I hear it in meetings all the time. Well, at least he's sober. Yeah, but he's cheating on his wife and his credit card debt's out the butt and he's not a happy camper. So just because he's not drinking and drugging, we've had a successful day today? I'm sorry. Doesn't sound too successful to me. I bought the whole package, not just the stay sober one stupid day at a time. I bought the whole package. I want to be happy, joyous, and free. In order to do that, we got to do certain things, which is work the 12 steps. Y'all cool with that? The people that are doing it are on their feet. It's like a revival over here. I don't know what you girls are doing over here, but you're either connected to God or you got something I want. They got some dope over here. You're either high on this thing and you understand and you're nodding your head, or you're sitting in this room grinding your teeth, pissed off because you feel like you've been left behind. And I'm telling you, you have been. Well, you have been. Some of us are just going to struggle more than others. I understand that. But some of you are struggling so hard. I mean, Jesus, you're not sharing any kind of benefit to the newcomer. You're not bearing witness to God's power. You've stopped doing your own work. You're not working a program. You're sitting here coasting on an experience you had years ago, and you wonder why you're miserable. The little skinny guy from Texas is just telling you. It's not personal. It's not personal. God's not punishing you. Y'all understand this? My spiritual connection, my spiritual happiness, my spiritual wellness is not connected in any way to my external world. And if it is, I'm not spiritually connected. And we got to all get straight on that. I sound like a Baptist preacher more than every day than I... It just freaks me out. But that's what we do. We paint this picture with a newcomer. If everything goes good and she comes home and I get the job and everything's good, then I can be happy, joyous, and free. Talk to me when you're feeling lousy, when you're sick. Talk to me after the kid passes away. Let me catch you in that AA meeting, that CA meeting, making coffee 2 days after your divorce papers have been signed. And you'd like to be out there on the edge of a bridge jumping off. But you know what you're supposed to be doing, and you're back in there bearing witness to God's power. Those are the people I want to pick up cards. You want to argue with me whether there's a God? Stay away from my cards. I don't want to talk to you. Loser. I want to talk to the cats that are experiencing life, that are going through the good times and the bad times and staying sober. That's what this program is about. I'm sick and tired of letting people water our fellowships down. This is a spiritual program of action. We should be singing it from the mountaintop. We're not jamming this down anybody's throat. You want what we got? Come get it. You don't? Go away. Y'all got any questions? That's a good place to stop right there.
Hi, Chris. My name's Sammy, member of the Unionville Group.
Welcome.
You were talking about people being on the pink cloud. A fellow of our group, he's been around for 5 months, and he's always talking about the pink cloud, pink cloud. Now, he knows the person that he wants to go ask to be a sponsor, and I've approached him and said, well, when are you going to start the steps? Well, I always, his comment was, I have things to do first. I'm going to go away. I'm going to da-da-da. I said, well, that's a cheap excuse. If you're going to, you got to do it now. Well, how would you, or... what would I say to that person? Get out and come back when you're ready, or?
Here, what a great... No. Sometimes the big book says we pause when agitated or doubtful. You know, sometimes I got to slow down a minute. I got to think about what I'm going to say. But I got to make sure that I end up saying something correct to this guy. I got to tell him the truth. So I say, okay, that's fine. And I leave. And then he's found dead in the subway a week later. And then I get to lay in bed at night and question whether I did what I was supposed to do. I can go up to the little guy and say, listen, this is our experience. The window of opportunity, this pink cloud that you're on, is real. Enjoy it. It will not last. And I don't know when the window's going to close. And it may be tomorrow, and it may be 3 weeks from now. You may have time to go on a vacation and start a new family before you do. We watch people in the fellowship do that, and it may close tomorrow. So the urgency is to finish the steps so that you can get on some solid ground. Now, if I've told him that, then I'll be sad when he dies, but at least I can have a clear conscience that I told him what it needed to be told. I'm not going to fight anybody. I'm going to say this often this afternoon. We have ceased fighting anything or anyone, including the mixed messages in our fellowships and the morons that perpetuate that stuff. But I have a right to tell somebody what they're doing. Make sense? It's like if a young woman is there's some guy in the group that's a known predator and he won't leave her alone. And I have a right, I think, to go to... I shouldn't look at you. Obviously, a guy with a haircut like this is... I bet you the women drive you insane, don't they? Always hanging on you and stuff, clawing on you. If there's a predator there, and I have a right to at least point it out to the, and then go and move on. I don't have to fix it. You can't. I just say, this is what I'm observing. You're heading for trouble here, in my opinion, and move on. At least I've said what I need to say. Cool? It's a great question. Who else?
Rob M., addict. Rob. Hi. Day 57. Day 56 was kind of rough. I'm back at work now, and I sort of felt my pink cloud lift. I'm glad you mentioned it doesn't have to go away. I'm feeling very stressed. And I felt that spiritual awakening sort of leave. I tried to talk to God, and I didn't feel him answering. I just felt the stress and the tiredness. How do you deal with that?
You don't want this answer. Okay, but I'm going to... Prayer is good. Meditation is good. Working with another is better. The answer to any problem any of you guys are having out here is a little quiet time and then go work with somebody else. Go find you a drunk or a little drug addict to work with and you'll be energized. I don't know what it's about. You with us? I mean, I'm glad I got sleep last night because I won't get sleep tonight because I've just the energy just getting to spend time with you guys. And so this, what you're going through is this roller coaster stuff. We need to talk about that. Maybe this afternoon, right after, we'll talk about it. Because all of you guys in here with various lengths of sobriety are going through this roller coaster thing. How many of you guys are in here less than a year sober? We're going to talk about that this afternoon. Better than half this group is new sobriety, young sobriety. And we need to talk about that. Because
the pink cloud doesn't have to go, though, because I'm scared of that.
No, it'll ebb and it'll flow. But if you want to keep it and you want to be on some solid ground, let's do the work necessary to stay there. This is for keeps, brother. This is for keeps. We all have bad days when we feel kind of goofy, but the good days better weigh out the bad days or you're going to go smoke crack. That's just all there is to it. Who else? Make a note.
Hi, I'm Corey. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Corey.
And Chris, you're very opinionated, and I'm not knocking that because I really like that. I'm sorry. I'm with George.
They got to get the deal.
Anyways, I'm very opinionated as well, and I'm wondering if you tone that down a bit for the newcomer because I've been told that I have problems with that.
We're going to talk about that specifically in the afternoon when we're talking about working with others. Guys, if y'all think that I'm going to go into an AA meeting and talk like I got 200 people in here. We're trying to keep your attention. And I'm 100 miles an hour, 50 gallons of coffee. When I'm sitting in an AA meeting or a CA meeting and I got a little newcomer in there, my deal is discernment. How can I bet? That's the prayer to God. How can I best approach this little knucklehead? And I'm going to slide up to him and we're going to talk a little bit. And I'm going to see if I can get his attention and see if I can get him to relax a little bit. Because if I can get him to relax a little bit, you with me? And I'm going to tell a few stories and he's going to tell a few stories. You all seen his laugh and it's like fishing and I'm going to set the dang hook and we're going to reel his little beggar in and this is going to be good. But you can't do it if you come at him and realize you got to work the steps. Nowhere in the book does it say do that. Follow the instructions in the book. It tells you exactly how to work with somebody else.
Hi. My problem is when I stand up and speak to somebody and I say I'm an addict, like I always say, I never came into the rooms because of alcohol. Like alcohol wasn't my problem. That's what I usually say. But somewhere somebody's telling me, well, Stacy, you're an addict now. And the thing is, it wasn't the alcohol that brought me to my knees. So I'm having a problem there saying I'm an alcoholic. Like, why do I have to be an alcoholic? Why can't I just be an addict? It's just that I know what happened to me smoking crack.
Yes.
And the same thing didn't happen to me when I drank. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, but when I picked up the crack after all those years, The only thing I do understand is if I drink today, it will make my mind, alcohol will make me say, oh, Stacey, that's not too bad, like when I'm drunk. You know, but I never had the problem of alcohol. It didn't make me spend up all my money. It didn't make me not pay my rent. It didn't make me...
Y'all hear where she's at? Let's bless you. Let's say, guys, in treatment, what we tell them is we need is a drug is a drug is a drug. It's all the same thing. And we got to go back and sin and say it's not. You can be a drug addict who's powerless over alcohol. It doesn't mean you're an alcoholic. It just means that the stuff will trigger that area of the brain. I never had any problem with codeine. But when I use codeine, it makes me want to go do crazy stuff with cocaine. You follow? So if we have to start making this long laundry list of individual things we were addicted to, we're not addicted to. But you find your little niche. That's why we loved Cocaine Anonymous in 1982 when the cats from California decided that we needed a little nest for little dope fiends to light and talk and share. You guys are coming in Alcoholics Anonymous and you're talking about cocaine and the cats can't relate. And nor should you. They're asking you to leave the meeting because you won't shut up about shooting methamphetamine. But the traditions in AA say that you can't do that. It's singleness of purpose. So we started other fellowships that you could go to and talk about that. And that's what I'm saying. God's going to use you to help somebody with the problem that you understand. I don't want you sitting in a Cocaine Anonymous meeting trying to share with somebody that's a heroin addict if you're not a heroin addict. If you're not a heroin addict, shut up. No, the absolute arrogance of you to think that you can help somebody when you have no experience with that. It's like guys talking to women that have been molested. You ever been molested? No? Then shut up. You have nothing to share. The problem is that in our fellowships is that we believe that because I'm an alcoholic and an addict, you know what I mean? I can help everybody with everything. We instantly become Mr. Answer Man. You know, we watch this all the time. It's like you're suffering from PTSD and I'm going to sit in there and tell you, buddy, you just need to spend a little more time with God in the morning. Why don't you shut the F up? You're going to kill this person. It's like people telling people they don't need to take antidepressants. Oh, excuse me? Did you go back to school and get your doctorate? No? Then shut up. You got no right to talk to people about that stuff. You think, obviously, it's a soapbox of mine. We got people talking about stuff that they don't know nothing about. And that's like I'm saying. Why? Let me ask you a question. We're going to talk about it again later this afternoon, but why do you think God let us survive? And some of us didn't survive. But we got to survive. And now I'm going to come back in the rooms, and he gave me everything I need to touch other people's lives. All I can share is my experience. You with me? You want to talk about childbirth or kids or something? Don't come talk to me, because I don't know nothing about it. Nor, comma, do I want to. Y'all... You follow me? But you can explain to somebody. All you got to do is suit up and show up and be in the right place, and God will use you. I'm a drug addict. Honor it and you get on down the road. When I'm in a CA meeting, I don't introduce myself as an alcoholic and an addict. This ANDA stuff drives me crazy. What kicked your ass? Cocaine. You're a cocaine addict. Introduce yourself with that and get on down the road. You've got a world of people to help with that one addiction. And that's the problem. You know, stop trying to fix everybody. You can't. You've got no experience with being addicted to alcohol. Don't try to help people that are addicted to alcohol. That's just respect, baby. That's just respect is all that is. Talking about something you don't know nothing about.
Hi. I get a little confused with the fellowships with clean time and who can share and who doesn't share. And they get judged on your clean time, whether you're qualified to share, whether or not your words are worth being heard, or when you're hearing somebody who's not where they are and shutting down. How wrong and right is that, and where should you be sitting, or is it all just a personal opinion?
I like this girl. Straight and to the point. You know, that's just clear. We're going to talk more about that again in this working with others in this last part when we're talking this later this afternoon. To sum it up, exactly what we were talking to Sister about. Exactly the same kind of deal. You have a right in this fellowship at One Day Sober to talk about something you have experience with. If you have no experience, shut up. If you're at my noon meeting and we're talking about the fourth step and you just got here and you don't know how to do the fourth step, you haven't done a fourth step, you have no right to share anything. Shut up. And somebody that has some cojones, the chairperson perhaps, probably, I don't know what girls have, guys have cojones. I don't know. Somebody should say very, very, very quietly and gently, excuse me, have you done a fourth step? Then We'll get with you right after the meeting. And then we're going to go on. Excuse me, John, would you like to share about the fourth step? And then we move on. Because nobody should have to sit there through this excruciating experience of listening to you stumble around a fourth step when you haven't had any experience with it. We need to share what we know, guys, not what we think, what we know. If you want to talk about what you think, go find a therapist. Or come before the meeting or after the meeting. Let's go to Timmy's and let's talk nonstop about it. But right now, let's talk about what we know. We got one more and then we got to go to dinner. Yeah.
As a sponsor, do I have a responsibility to teach the new person's 12 steps and the 12 traditions as well?
Yeah. We're going to hit it hard this afternoon. A sponsor's job is to do this, to get them connected spiritually and tell them about the program. Tell them about the fellowship. Tell them what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. Past that, you don't have any responsibility whatsoever. Who they date, what they date, how they dress, where they go, none of your damn business. We're killing people with too much of that nonsense. And we're wearing ourselves out talking about stuff we don't know nothing about. I mean, the last hour ought to be a bloodbath in here. So y'all come for that one. That'll be good. After lunch.